getting the site from the local municipality because of other issues which are beyond your control. Then in terms of the digital migration, what are the implications thereof? That's what I was asking. Because in terms of the financials, we are not so bad as other SOEs in terms of the one which then can suffer in terms of the financials. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. They can. Some of the challenges can affect the delivery of the project. And what we've done in the project at least, we identified those risks up front and we put a little bit more of contingency in terms of days and some of those things. But certainly, if the municipality is not giving us access to site, then the question is, do we build at risk or what do we do? And if not, then we have the risk of having the project move into the next financial year. Then on page 12, I think the question was, have we finalized the tariff? At least what we said there was the tariff model, and that's the one that we show on page 33. In fact, that one we did finalize in terms of the model. There are still some questions that are being asked by the industry about some of the assumptions, but largely we believe that they have an understanding of what we're trying to do. And maybe a couple of things that we are taking in there as we engage. The tariffs themselves, we have a set of tariffs, and we've shown some numbers to the broadcasters, but that is subject of engagement further with them. The other issue coming from yesterday was the community broadcasts that have been carried on the paid television platform. We don't have anything to do with those. I think as Councillor Shuk said yesterday, it's typically what happens between two broadcasters, or platform owner, not sure in this case, and the community broadcasters. And we don't play roles in that area. Certainly on page 26, what is reflected on page 26 is what used to happen in the past. And when you go to 60%, it was on that basis. And we noted earlier that that plan was based on trying to maximize incremental population coverage. And we noted that that does not work well to balance the interests of people in urban and rural areas. So we've moved from that model where we now concentrate in a province. And we try to fill the entire province, taking into account both the rural and urban areas within the province. So when we finish Free State in December now, it will be all of Free State covered. When we finish Limpopo and Mpumalanga and KZN, it will be all of the provinces covered. And we think that that will then provide the right balance between the different the need to have everybody involved in the project.
Hello? Honorable Muruto? Captain? Okay, not that much better. Continue to you.
Let's remember, housing is done. Housing was the first one to be completed. There's one site that we had some issues with, but it has been done. Then on slide 41, absolutely a very important point. One looks at the at homes and you look at the areas that are currently supporting analog television. That's a very big cause for worry. Because sometimes those areas may not be able to support DTT. And we've worked previously with the industry to come up with some numbers of how many people need to change areas. That's basic on the because the frequency then affects the types of areas that you use. Moving forward, in addition to that, we get very worried about exactly the homes able to support. I mean, if I was in a home and I was on a portable on an indoor area, as we depict there, and now I have to go on an outdoor area, will the home structure, for example, support that? So those are things that really worry us, and that's why really support we support the effort to focus on citizen support as a specific area of this project. And noting that it's a multi-stakeholder, all stakeholders have to be in there. We believe that the provincial model of rolling out project will also allow all stakeholders, the post office, USASA, the department with a awareness campaign, the installers and everybody else, to be able to focus on small geographic areas so that we can attend to almost every home one at a time because of the different requirements. I'll actually also go into the other question on the issue of areas. The it's not everybody who is going to need a new area. A lot of the existing areas should be able to work. It's also not that if you have an old television set, it does not necessarily mean you have to have a new area. The new area will, the requirement for that will come from the frequencies, the new frequencies, most of the time of the for DCT will also come in connection of the power on the transmission on DCT. So there's no link between the television set when it was bought and the area. But we still know that there are a lot of people who are going to be affected who will need to have new areas. I think they provide some numbers, there's some work that may need to be to be done there, but together we did provide some numbers together with the industry on this matter. And from the presentation yesterday, and also noting the previous presentation by SASA, they understood that the subsidy also includes the set-top box and areas for people who need new areas. Then on page 32, I think first maybe we'll explain the maps, probably that will also cover a number of questions. When we show red, that's certainly analog television as we have it. The blue shows the additional coverage from digital television. So when you get DTT, you combine the red and the blue. That's so that you see that DCT provides the benefit. So there's actually what I'm saying here, there's more coverage coming from DCT for where we're showing. We also know that in certain cases, the cases where the analog was on much lower frequencies and DCT is on higher frequencies, and there may be some loss of terrestrial coverage there, but then satellite will be able to cover those. we will update this the index, the annotation of the diagram to show that red includes analog and underline that is also digital. So blue on its own is actually just pure digital. Then on page 32, on Maxwell, the nature of the solution was kind of intimated. That's one element. I mean, the reason why I say it's a regulatory issue is that one, if one looks at the policy and also the draft regulations that have come through, it suggests that broadcasters will continue having the same license conditions as they migrate. So the NH is not obliged to increase its coverage. ETV is not obliged to increase its coverage. And so is the SABC. And SABC, because we're already implementing SBC 2 is already, if we maintain SBC 2's coverage, then at no additional cost that we then have SBC 1 and 3 increase their coverage. But for the other broadcasters, I think the key issue there is that they have to be on new sites upfront. So that question, that's the reason why we say it's really a regulatory problem first. Probably would like to defer to the regulations as they come through to see how the problem has been dealt with. But there was some information yesterday about the kind of where the solution would be. Why was it one option for that from the ETV presentation? But really, probably it will be covered in the DTC regulations as they come through. On page 35, the issue, I think, let's say, whether it's the broadcasters or otherwise who have set the standard, and let's say the broadcasters from, as you were saying yesterday, is the incumbent broadcasters, and they will allow other broadcasters as they come through to participate in the free-day associations or the grouping. And one assumes that once the specification is done to manufacturers, then it will stay for any new manufacturer who comes into the system. So the manufacturer, I think the statement there says that the manufacturers are responsible for the implementation of the security requirements in the box. They get their requirements from somewhere else. And one assumes that those requirements come stable for some time. And when they change, they don't disrupt the rest of the system. I think it's quite important as we define the requirements now and the specification that we kind of look ahead so that we don't disrupt the things. So that even when there are new things coming in, they can come through updates and not through any new set-up that have to be installed in the system. So the manufacturers themselves will not on their own affect the basic requirements. I think the part of the standard document, the earlier part of the standard document before this paragraph, does know that manufacturers, based on their own marketing strategies and above and beyond the basic requirements as put in the standard, can put new things. But that there's a business model around there that requires them probably to work with the broadcasters anyway for them to do that. The National Treasury and Zero Elimination, formally we get a response in the budget during the budget speech. And I can't say any more than what we have had discussions with them the way as we're making our case. And right now we don't have any formal indication of where they're going. On the issue, on page 55, can the spectrum be used for mobile services? I think that's an issue for the regulator, probably unlikely to do so, but I mean, probably the construction of the frequency plan. The frequency plan is a guiding document, and it's a document that is constructed a lot on, probably in compliance with some of the international admin, and certainly ICASA, the regulator, consulting as they do right now through JSEC with the industry and getting from the industry, would be able to deal with that. There was some intimation yesterday around the wide range, kind of similar concept, but not necessarily the same concept, but fairly similar, but certainly ICASA regulations, I think we saw when ICASA was presenting yesterday, it was quite clear that the regulation making process is quite a long process, and necessarily so, because you do, especially for DCT, you do regulations, you are shaping the industry in a way that we haven't shaped it since the birth of television. And whatever decisions are made now do affect both businesses and the economy for many, many years to come. And I think that's the underlying principle that ICASA presented yesterday in terms of the length of the regulatory making process. So, I mean, we are not saying ICASA has been slow. We're just saying that it has taken us, the industry, a little bit of time to finalize the regulations. And we've already stated that we will do whatever it takes to assist the industry for things that we're in control of, to assist in finalizing these regulations. The question about a national coverage plan, we've certainly been asked before to have a broadcast master plan, particularly for public broadcasting, something that we're still trying to work with. I think we're trying to work together with the broadcasters and ICASA to come up with that, and then to particularly look at public broadcasting services for both radio and television. There is a frequency plan, certainly, for DTT. It's there, it's stable. It provides the kind of coverage that we have mentioned here, particularly for public broadcasting. And, I mean, if we say that the blue and the red combined show DTT, and then the rest of the gas are provided by a satellite, then you certainly have a method of providing, a formal method to support a policy of providing universal access, 100% availability of public broadcasting services, both radio and television. But I think the bigger question is really on portable radio services, for example, public broadcasting services, portable radio, FM. How do we deal with issues of diversity in language services? I think that's something that I have to work on to come up not only with a frequency plan, but also a plan at concept level, defining the problems even properly. So that is still a work in process, I must say.
Any other issue members not answered or a resignation?
Actually related to the reply you've given now. If you look at page 26 of your presentation, second paragraph, you talk about there that there's a skew towards urban areas in terms of DTT coverage, and there's often been this. It's often been said that here in the committee, I think, that we shouldn't just be focusing on population coverage. We should be focusing on geographic coverage. Now, with the rollout of DDT and the coverage across the country, are you sure that every single place where people are living is actually going to be covered? Will you be able to assure that? And a question I'd like to ask is that, would you not consider perhaps that another option would be the use of DTH, which is directed to home transmission? Is that not something that could also assist in ensuring that we don't miss out any area where people are living? Because basically, I think perhaps what the question I'm asking is, if I decide to go and live anywhere in the country, will I be able to access and get TV coverage through the DTT rollout?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if my question regarding the maintenance cost for STDs based on the number of units, if that was covered.
Thank you. There are some other questions that we still have to work through, for sure. The on page 21, we changed the model from trying to pursue maximizing incremental population coverage, going province-wise. So at least that takes away the skew for urban areas out of the project plan, out of the rollout plan. And that's how the blue show the additional, on page 21, additional coverage per province. Then on page 22, the last block there in yellow, shows that's the satellite coverage. And what you're saying, the satellite coverage is across the country, but the yellow specifically shows people who won't have access to where there is no terrestrial coverage. So if you live in any of the places in yellow, that's a place where you would need a satellite dish to be able to receive the public services. Which then says that, yes, the answer is yes. Everybody will be able to receive at least the free-to-air services where in the case where there's no terrestrial network, then satellite will be there. So the answer then is, yes, if you decide to live anywhere, and specifically in the yellow areas, you won't find terrestrial, but you will find satellite there. And therefore, that guarantees 100% access geographically. And so we've definitely used DDH in the plan.
Any other question?
Okay. The
maintenance cost.
Yes. The maintenance cost is on 5 million subscribers. So we have 5 million set-top boxes. Because our interpretation of the mandate was to, we took a narrow definition of the mandate to physically protect the government subsidized set-top boxes, where the solution does not touch content at all. It has nothing to do with the actual broadcasting services. It's a solution that works on the box itself. However, if the system then says, if the requirement is to cover all, or to provide the voice control on all boxes, then that number changes. Certainly will change. So the assumption is 5 million. The question on page 50, what you're showing on the first column of numbers is what we plan to do for this financial year. So the second column is the total number of sites per province, and those will be covered in the next financial year. So by December 2015, we'll have covered all the sites in all provinces that you've done. The question was, what are the benefits to the people and what makes people move from analog to DTT? All the realization is, I think, it's not advisable probably to switch off. I think the question was asked, well, if somebody hasn't bought the box in an area, can you switch off? It's a public issue, public interest issue, and so on and so forth. So I think the project once would like to see people migrating the homes, all of them, before the signal is switched off in the province, and then we do so per province. And the question then is what will make people move? Certainly content will. Content is the key, and the issues raised by services certainly have a bearing on this migration, home migration, that if there is no that content, then we'll certainly not have. Availability of the logistic system will also affect people. The boxes have to be available in post offices, the system has to work well, the satellite system has to work well. If it's difficult for me to get my voucher in the sense of where the model is to subsidize people, then I may just not go to get it. In any case, I may have to pay her more money. So the ease of interaction with the DTT system for citizens is very, very important. The consumer awareness or citizen awareness about this is very, very important. The business case, I think, for homes, for migration, is very, very important. And the case has to be made in terms of communication of why we need to migrate. The other benefits of the digital dividend, also probably has, can assist you that. So all of those things do affect. It can be positioned as benefits to the city, as benefits to the country. And probably people will start with what benefits me directly right now in my house today. And content is probably the key driver there. And the other thing is I think it was intimated by the DDG mentioned that we are now working with the SABC and the department on e-government services. Because of that is, we think that's a very powerful way that given the people not having access to online content, for example, the CIS, the information coming out of the What Happened in Parliament and so on and so forth, the parliamentary website that has a lot of information, there's allowance for e-government services to be carried on DTT. So we're also looking at that. So immediately, and we know it's possible, it can be done, and we have tested it and so on. No, immediately it means that all the 8 million, 12 million TV-owning households, and the 8 million that may be consuming the television solely from terrestrial television, free-to-air, will now get access to this government or state-related content, online content. So project some information about GCIs, provide some information about Parliament, and so on and so forth. That online content immediately available to all TV-owning households. We believe that that's something that it can also be, and that's very easy to do, that's something that can be used to create to move people or incentivize people to migrate. Yes, the progress is certainly we are only now starting to roll out. What we did during the first half of the year was to complete our procurement processes, do the planning essentially. And it was always our intention that it will be the third quarter of the year that we then start sending out people to do the rollout. So what we're seeing now is the beginning stages of a rapid increase in the deployment. so that by, I mean, the fourth quarter will be the most important one for us because that's where we go and do at least three provinces. But everything is fine. When we talk about that, remember the map that we gave on page, page 10, we've been spending a lot of time fixing the civil works, even places where we don't have to do construction. That's what we have to do. So that has been going on. We've spent a time doing fixing the electrical work, and so on and so forth. But we can't say we are done. When we are done, that means that everything in that site is done. So the basic work has been going on, definitely. On the risk of the community broadcasters, it's a very difficult topic, this one. And there's work, it would also like to finalize the tariff issues and then, work with the regulator on how to further optimize what we've done for community broadcasters on analog. See how we apply that to DTT. Just give an example in housing. Tranitiv and Soweto TV used to be one site each, but the frequency plan now says that they have to be at 10 sites because it's a single frequency network. You can, from a technical point of view, try to tweak it so that it's one site, but it's very, very, very difficult, and it does not guarantee the integrity of the service, particularly for SABC on MAX 1. So the standard process is that if you are on that single frequency network, the content must be the same at all the sites that share that frequency. And in housing, all the sites share that single frequency on MAX 1. That means that certainly the potential audience increases quite significantly. But it doesn't mean that it will result in Sony TV not having more revenue. But the cost will increase because the costs are there upfront, immediately. But the revenue will lag and may probably not even materialize. So those are the kind of issues that we are dealing with. It's happening for all other community broadcasters. But we'll see how we can work it out with the regulator. And the regulatory and policy issues, I think the CASA did confirm the regulations are coming soon. And that will remove that risk. It would have come after a lot of consultation with the industry. So to the extent that there are no lawsuits or anything like that against ICASA, then that should remove that issue from there. And we all know what we are working towards.
Yeah, I still respond.
But just the soon. How soon is the soon?
You see, that's the question for ICASA. Continue, CEO. ICASA, how soon you must respond? CEO, continue your question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Members, any question? Not
yeah. I think the question was asked on page 15, the last one, which is on... Otherwise, unless otherwise, I think we.
I don't get a white seat, so sit down.
Allocated by the regulator. I think it's in the interest of everybody, also from the regulator, to make sure that there is efficient use of spectrum allocated there. And we have proposed that that unused spectrum in the provinces be allocated to additional community broadcasters in the short term.
Members, any follow-up for Centec? I'm sure you are ready to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's not a question per se. It's just a general comment in terms of all our SOEs. That will be. And I will make an humble appeal to the DDG of DOC to see a need of having a very thorough citizen education based on what has been said, because it does have the implications. We might also have other issues in terms of community not accepting the change because they're not aware in terms of the details. Even when you switch on, that probably a TV set would be useless and all those things. From the background I'm coming from, informal settlement, rural areas, I will have a serious financial discomfort on those things and I need to be told upfront. So I'm just saying that because we did raise it yesterday, but the way it was in terms of the mood, it was by the way because we have launched it and that probably will take it. And I didn't get a very clear feel in terms of the marketing education program, how do we intend to unfold, because other things can be done in terms of educating our society before even our readiness in terms of the set-top boxes, because there are other technical and financial implications that our consumers need to bear the cost of, other than only the major process industry role players that we are interested on. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you. Ikasa?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for giving us this opportunity. We want to commend...
not to make presentation.
No. Yeah, we just want to commend Centec. You know, they've done a brilliant job and they've constantly mentioned where we interact with them. And I think my colleague, Kari, will provide answers to that. And I really appreciate your last point on education. ICASA is also positioning itself to come up with a memorandum of understanding with USASA because they cannot do it alone. So our consumer component will now take another new phase of education where we go to sites to educate our people on this new development. Over to you, Kari.
Thank you.
I don't know whether it's Kari Masala or Kari. Kari.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable.
That was the Councillor Kari. Honorable Ruto.
Chairperson, you know, if you're a chairperson, you just remain a chairperson all over. Chairperson Ikasa now, surprisingly, he wants to be chairperson of the committee. You know, chairperson, I just needed a direction. Maybe. You see, we're talking about the education to the community on this issue. Very serious. I don't know whether all of us are exposed to the kind of community that we have, you know, where I stay. And, Chairperson, I wanted to know from you, maybe, you know, in the cycle of discussing with the leadership in Parliament and some, what would be the role of the CIS in this whole thing, the government information system? Because I really think they have their responsibility. Just note that, Chairperson.
Thank you. Councillor Kari.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, I just have 2 points to make. The one is that we have consulted our lawyers again this morning and we look like it will be in a position to table the regulations at the council meeting on Tuesday. So when we say soon, that's the kind of time frame we're looking at. And then thereafter they would have to be published in a gazette. The second point relates to the issue around tariffs. We did have a fruitful discussion with the Centec CEO this morning, and I think we were on the same page with finding solutions to the problems that the tariff situation throws up. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Who's going to answer the interoperability?
Thank you, Honourable Members and Honourable Chairman. The issue of interoperability has been on our radar screen ever since we licensed commit to the licensing of the pay TV. And then we were sitting with a conundrum where you'd have five different operators with different set-top boxes. Given the workload and spreading of our regulatory projects over a long period, we felt it best, firstly, we are confronted with the reality that an interoperable set-top box is not aligned with, in spite of our challenges here, aligned with developments elsewhere. In terms of our research, we established it failed in Singapore. But going forward, we would want to certainly conduct an inquiry to see what is feasible, bearing in mind the technical challenges around setting up an interval setup box and issues of costs. So that's a challenge that we face, but I think to get a comprehensive answer to this, we would want to consult with industry.
Thank you. Centec, I'm sure you are done with your question. ICASPA, they are done with their question. I'm sure MNET can set up, but then once they are setting up, Councillor Akari, when you're saying Tuesday you're presenting a regulation for what purpose?
The final step in the regulation making process is to present the regulations to council for approval, and thereafter they can then be gazetted once that approval is obtained.
Oh, when are you going to present the one for tariff?
That's because on a separate track, Chair.
Yeah, because you see, my problem is that I know broadcast, but now I'm having it nice in terms of spectrum and the other thing is fine. But in terms of, the issue of Centec, I think it becomes an issue which you must respond to first in terms of the sharing. What is the position of the regulator? It can be an issue for Centec. The regulator must be clear on that matter of the mass sharing. What happened about the unused spectrum and so on and so on, it can be Centec. You must be clear. If you are clarity as a regulator, you give them that spectrum to do whatever, but you must say so as the regulator and give them it. But as I'm saying now, it will seem as if it's a matter that does not seem to be belonging anyway. It's just somewhere in the middle between Centec and the regulator. But who's got the ownership of the matter? Who must run the issue? Centec or the regulator? That must be clarified. It can't be somewhere in the middle. So the one who's responsible must deal with that matter and clarity must be given. If you say Centec is the problem, because we're not listening to the CEO, he's saying we are charging per use. So what it means, the broadcasters will only pay for the capacity they are using. But the transmitter is there running at a cost. How does Centec recoup their cost? You see, those are the issues which must come in and be looked at. That's the reality. So what I'm saying is that Centec problem or is a regulatory matter. So one of the two, it can be a middle road. That Centec decide that now we've got the extra capacity of spectrum. Let's use it for something else, then it go against some of the regulations and the other things and so on. So I think, I'm not sure, but where I am, it seems to be a regulatory matter. We need clarity before you complete DPT. Because you see, this is part and parcel of the DPT. That's why I'm asking what you are presenting has also talked to those matters. Because it should be able to give that particular clarity so that there is certainty moving forward and so on. It does not become a centric matter, it's a regulatory matter. So I think probably you must help us around that particular matter so that when we leave here, we've got no ambiguity and so on. It's the same goes with the issue of tariff. Yesterday, in passing, if I hear you correct, you're talking about transcapping. In passing, but you said you are looking at other options, but you mooted price capping. What does price capping mean in this context? How is it going to work and the other thing, other selling price capping and the other thing? So those issues need to be clarified because they're part and parcel of this thing. I can assure you, the next court battle will be the tariff. I can assure you, you can ignore it, but this DPT is going nowhere because the next court battle will be the issue of tariff. we're going to shelve this DDT thing until that query has been finalized. So, whether you like it or not, if you don't read the mood, but where I am, I've listened to presentation, I'm reading the mood, the next court battle is tariff, and I think the regulator must take lead. Because we can't say Centec is a player party. You've got the responsibility as a regulator to deal with those things.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Those are highly pertinent issues that we must address. We'll just give you a glimpse on what we are doing, but we'll go more into detail. Let me give Rotes to elaborate a bit on that.
Good afternoon, Chair, afternoon members.
Or you can operate where you are. It depends how technological you are, but I'm told here.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the Centec tariff, the authority has a dual mandate here. The first mandate is to ensure that broadcasters pay a fair tariff for signal distribution. And the second mandate is to ensure that the financial viability of Centec is enshrined, because the financial viability of Centec is what will make DDT a success in the future. And the action that the Council has taken in this regard is that we conducted an inquiry under Chapter 10 of the Electronic Communications Act, and that process defines and identifies the effectiveness of competition in the provision of signal distribution services. At this stage, the authority will soon be releasing its findings of this inquiry, where the authority is likely to indicate the need for a review of Centec's tariff towards a cost-oriented basis, and this is something that Centec has already committed to based on the fact that it is a state-owned entity and it has a mandate to support the development of the country. The development of this cost-oriented model must take into account the significant investment costs that Centec has incurred and upgrading its network to provide the DDT services across the country. And so towards this end, an efficient pricing model, although this is a view, this is not the authority's final position, an efficient pricing model is one where the tariffs are based on the spectrum assigned to broadcasting service licensee. And that's the difference here, spectrum assigned rather than spectrum used. The model will also have to take into account not only the capital expenditure linked to the upgrading of existing sites, but as you heard from Centec this morning, that there are a number of new transmission sites which they have to pay for. So the cost model has to extend itself from its current cost environment to extend and include those new ones, which will indicate that from a CapEx point of view, the cost of providing a digital terrestrial signal will increase. All of these factors will be taken into account, taking into account the investment figures per se, the cost drivers such as electricity, wages, import duties, as well as efficiency when it comes to wages, the use of its assets, OPEX, the use of electricity, exchange rate volatility and things like that. These are the sort of factors that a regulator will have to see that it's managed efficiently. Very much like NERSA manages the price cap environment for ESCOM right now, although that would be an extreme step for the regulator. We are not considering that at this stage. The time frames would be hopefully be draft regulations by close of the financial year, with closure by June 2013. These draft regulations would include, and this is where it matters for the broadcasters, a transparent manner in which we see how the costs are incurred. And so if everybody understands how costs are incurred, the outcome of the cost is the price. And the matter here is about tariff transparency, rather than the fact that the tariff is too high or too low. Understanding of the cost structure necessarily means that you have to agree on what the price will be. And that's the goal that the regulator is intending to achieve.
Thank you. I hope you will also address the issue of the annual capacity of the sharing.
Yes, the Honorable Chairperson. Well, Advantech indicated they didn't make a proposal, but the unused capacity allocated to community TV on Multiplex 1 should be made available for new community broadcasters in those particular areas, and that's something that we are considering in finalizing the regulation.
No, thank you. As long as within your radar, is there when you finish, it's okay. But I can tell you, if you don't do the tariff, forget about it. Mnet? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman, and thank you to the Honourable Members for allowing us the opportunity today to present here. We're very pleased to be here. My name is Patricia Royan. I'm the CEO of MNET, and I have with me my colleagues here today, so allow me to introduce them to you. Sitting opposite me, managing the laptop, is Aynan Doyle, who's the Manager of Regulatory Affairs for MIH. Calvin Awareness, sitting next to me, is the Head of Regulatory Affairs for Orbicom. And Dave Hagen, sitting next to Calvo, is our Technical Director for All Matters DTT at MNET. What I would like to do is take you through an outline of what our presentation will consist of today, and hopefully we'll not keep you here too long. I'm going to quickly do a very brief introduction, and then Dave will take you through some lessons learned of what, you know, the things we've been busy with regarding DTT at MNET. Aynan will take you through some of the regulatory hurdles that we currently face, I think many of which have been mentioned, so perhaps we'll just be summarizing those as to where we are today and why we are where we are today. Calvo will take us through what we are, or what we have done regarding our preparation for DTT launch, and then I will conclude with our outline of exactly where we are at MNET. We were here 14 months ago. We presented to this very same portfolio committee. What we presented then, if I may just remind all the honourable members, is that we said obviously that it's been necessary for ourselves to move very quickly regarding the migration process. Globally, many countries have made a lot of progress in this regard, and we have not. We also mentioned that the set-top box, or the digital converter, as we called it, is really an interim step, and I think we all need to remind ourselves of that constantly, for analog TVs to be able to receive a digital signal. In time, and in fact in some countries in a very short space of time, they have moved to integrated TV sets where there is no need for a set-top box, and the digital signal is simply picked up by the television set itself. We also spoke about the cost of that set-top box, and we also spoke about the fact that it is content that drives the uptake of DTT in many markets, because you move from sometimes a singular channel environment to a multi-channel environment, which gives the consumer or the citizen a much larger variety of content from which to choose. So it is really a wonderful consumer option. You'll see from the charts up there, it's a reminder that we move from analog TV to analog TV with a converter, which is really what we're talking about today, the set-top box being the converter, and then finally you move away from that completely to an integrated television where there's no need for a set-top box. I think it's also an opportune time for me to just perhaps mention that although South Africa was the first African country to start with cloud way back in 2001, we are now in the unfortunate position, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that in fact we are lagging behind many countries in the rest of Africa. And I've listed some of the countries there where DTT has already launched commercially. Some of them are neighbours, and they have made very good progress in this regard. I won't run through the list names, you can read them for yourselves. In most of these countries, the lessons learned is that it is the content that drives the uptake. The decoders, that being the set-top boxes, are retailing from anywhere between $35 to $40. That is in the retail store. You walk in the store and that's what you buy it for. The free-to-air content is largely free and unencrypted, and there is accessibility to the content by all. And the pay bouquets that are offered on this particular technology retail between $6 and $22 a month. So you can see that this is addressing markets that traditionally have not had pay TV, and is also encouraging people to enter into a multi-channel environment. We have not launched. there are obstacles that need to be addressed. We'll explain those in a moment. It is 14 months since we last sat here. When we last sat here, we told the portfolio committee that we are ready to launch. It is 14 months later, and nothing has happened. I'm now going to hand you over to Dave, who will take you through where we are with our trials. We had some very interesting, extensive trials, and he will explain some of the technology behind that. And then thereafter, we'll hand over to Aon. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Patricia. Chair, honourable members, I'll just give you a short update on the history of MS contribution to the establishment of DDT in South Africa and look at some of the challenges and recommendations we are putting forward that we've learned over the last number of years. That picture over there shows a glimmer of light at the end of the road. I don't think it's a looming dark cloud anymore, and I really hope that South Africa takes 2013 as the year to establish DDT fund for its beginning of its migration. Thanks, Anna. I was privileged to be involved in the first DDT trial in 2001. It was an MPEG 2 DVB-T1 trial in Johannesburg some 11 years ago, and that trial was used to forge negotiations at the GO6 conference in 2005-2006 that has laid the way for the DDT launch in South Africa. However, there's been a long delay in DDT, and there's a number of negatives that have affected MNET quite severely. The first is that our current analog network was purchased by MNET and operated by Centec. And those transmitters are special transmitters to run an encrypted analog television signal that have been running for 26 years now. That network is at high risk at the moment. Some of the key transmitter sites are no longer supported from a staff perspective and a space perspective. And next year we budget and get another 14 million rand to sustain that analog network for another 3 years, we believe, which is the period of dual illumination. Also, our decoders have been in the market 26 years. They are no longer supported. You can't buy them anymore. And it's very, very difficult to replace decoders that are faulty for our analog subscribers. Secondly, after 2006, with the intention to launch DDT imminently, we slowed down our marketing and sales of analog subscribers on that network. It would be unethical to sell them a platform knowing quite well that you're going to move to DDT. So that subscriber base has declined, but still there are people wanting to get onto the analog network, and it's quite difficult to find second-hand refurbished codes to give to those subscribers. In 2009, ICASA granted us a license to do a second trial. This was a DVB-T1 MPEG-4 trial that yielded some 10 standard definition services. We ran a trial for a year in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban, and it was stopped suddenly when the debate came around, the standards debate around ISDBT versus DVB-T. MNET then decided with ETV at the time to convert our trial from T1 to T2, and we demonstrated for the first time on the continent of Africa DVB-T2 operational, not in a boardroom, not in a laboratory like ISDBT was doing it, but in people's homes in Soweto. We decided to recruit 60 homes in Imsinkloppi in Soweto, and we put in a DVB-T2 decoder in those homes and gave those people the existing SABC123, ETV, and Soweto TV with an additional 15 channels and 19 radio services on one multiplex. That's the capacity of DVB-T2. And the trial now has been running, ladies and gentlemen, since October 2010, almost 2 years, or just over 2 years. And in that time, we obviously received valuable research and information, and that trial really facilitated savvy countries adopting DVB-T2. Many, many ministers and savvy countries came around and actually witnessed the trial operational. What we also did in the trial is we installed some IDTVs. IDTV is a flat screen TV set with a built-in DVB-T2 receiver. There was lots of them available as T1, and while we were running the T1 trial, we were inundated with people buying DVB-T1 IDTVs. Fortunately, Centec, SABC, and ourselves switched the T1 trial off immediately to prevent the sale of IDTVs into the market. But we placed 3 IDTVs into Soweto, and the people in their homes really enjoyed that device, not having a decoder and the cables, a small area outside, and received all the free-to-air services on that IDTV. So what we typically did for this trial, and one of the key lessons learned, is we established a help desk or a call center. We manned it with 3 people from 7 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. to manage these 60 homes. And when we did the improvement of these 60 homes, we sat with everybody one-on-one, and we put a stick on each decoder with a call center number. Well, for the third week, second week, no calls were received, and then rumors started to come through that there were a lot of problems on our trial. So we went back into Soweto, walked the beat, and visited these 60 homes, and a lot of very key issues were coming out. The first issue is that these people had never had access to digital experience before. So it's the first time they had a remote in their hands, the first time they were inundated with EPG and synopsis of movies, radio service on TV, and a lot of them had reception problems. The decoder was working, next morning they wake up, no signal. What we did is we tried to use as many existing antennas as possible in the trial, and where there were bunny ears, we had to replace those with outdoor grid antennas. But still there were reception problems, and the concern was why these people were not phoning our call center. When we interviewed them by research company, two key things came out. The first was an absolute naivety or misunderstanding how you relate a call to a call center to watch television. For 37 years they've been watching TV. Nobody's ever had to phone the call center because SABC 1 is not working or the program on SABC 2 is not great. So there's a whole cultural experience or learning that has to happen in South Africa to tell people, because this box is in your home and it's a complex device, if it doesn't work, how do I get it fixed? The second thing that was the most interesting was, why don't you phone the call center? And the key issue was, I don't have the funds on my cell phone. None of the homes have fixed line communication. All of them are running on prepaid vouchers. They run on a 5 tiger or a 12 rand voucher per month, and they use that to receive calls from their family in rural areas back to Soweto. Never an outbound call. So when they phoned our call center, even though there wasn't an IVR or a long delay getting through, by the time they got through and tried to understand the problem, the month air time had expired. The third thing that we noticed was that when people did phone in, it's very complex to try and talk somebody through a problem that had never had a decoder and a digital experience in their home before. So I used an analogy, and it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. We asked one of the ladies, what's on your decoder? She said, a vase. No, we don't mean what's on top of your decoder, what's on the decoder's display. So it's a bit of a naive, tongue-in-cheek example, but it's very, very complicated to step somebody through a decoder via a call center in 11 different visual languages. So what we did was, we tried toll-free numbers, and to set up a toll-free number that operates across four mobile networks is almost an impossibility. Then we tried an SMS and an outbound call center, where they would SMS us with a free advertised SMS, and we would phone them back. But the problem still existed, that you couldn't talk a person through the problem to resolve the reception issue, or the decoder issue, or the upgrades and things. So out of desperation, we came up with a solution, and it really is a solution that is working extremely well today. The two gentlemen and ladies that were involved in the recruitment of the trialists in Soweto live in Soweto, and they're part of the community. And we educated them, accredited them, and gave them an update with a simple phone that they could receive SMSs from the community and go to those people one-on-one and resolve the problem personally. That has been going for the last 2 years. And very successfully, it's the only way we're supporting just 60 homes in Soweto that will own 5 million or 6 million homes in South Africa. And it's important that they want to have somebody in their home to help them do an upgrade, to resolve a problem, to retune their TV set, to send the decoder back if it fails, to send the power supply back if it gets blown up by lightning. So there's this interaction, personal interaction from the community. And we call them community support representatives in Soweto that look after those 60 homes. They typically get in 3 calls a week. In summer, quite a lot more because of lightning and power outages that affect the decoder. Our recommendation has been that one person could support at least 200 homes in the community. And if you look at those 5 million homes that are financially strapped and are going to be subsidized with the decoder, to support them ongoing, you could easily achieve 24,000 sustainable jobs in communities, in rural areas, to look after the DTT model. We've written a job spec, we've done a curriculum with Dr. Vessa upstairs there, and we've proposed that to the DOC. I think this is one of the areas where you can really put jobs in rural areas and it's sustainable to look after the trialists, or even, sorry, not the trialists, the DTT people that are migrating. So in closing, a number of lessons learned. That's just one example. Expand a little bit about the community support representatives. The viewers really appreciate the great improvement in picture quality, and I won't labor that. It's standard definition. They all say to us it looks like high definition. Content is absolutely critical. They had 4 television services. They suddenly had 20 and 19 radio services on there. They really, really like the variety of content in multiple languages with hard-of-hearing subtitles and the radio services. We tested interactive applications, to be honest. We had a weather application and a home affairs application that was not used at all by that community in Soweto. Too complicated, too slow, and it's debatable what the value is of interactive television at that market there. But it was a trial about a year ago we did that. Maybe we should resurrect the MHEC-5 applications. It is absolutely critical what we learned, that the antenna is correctly installed. Existing antennas in the home are not typically in the right band. DGTs in the UHF band, existing homes are on the VHF band. Those antennas will need to be replaced. So 1.2 million TV households in South Africa will have to have an antenna change from VHF to UHF. But installation is critical also. You can't have a fly-by-night guy with a ladder and a couple of connectors to go and do it. You need some test equipment to make sure the signal you're receiving is of the right level, the right noise ratios, and the right modulation error rates to make sure that that's a consistent, reliable reception. I think that's the most critical thing, is to make sure that, take one of the major factors out of the problem, put up an outside antenna, cable it properly, and make sure you've got the right signal strength. And South Africa, fortunately, has adopted an outdoor antenna only, no indoor active antennas which are prone to interference and failures. And last but not least, IDTV in the 3 homes was really a big hit, not only by the trialists, but by the people that came around to visit it. It is the thing of the future. It's a flat-screen device with a D2 receiver in it. It's clean. It operates very easily. And I think that's going to be one of the challenges going forward is how many IDTVs come into the country over and above set-top boxes. Thank you, Opposition.
Thank you, Dad. Anna?
Thank you. My apology, honourable members, for my backing towards you while driving the presentation, but when the pushing time begins, I'll
move across.
Yes, I'll cross the floor so you can see my face. I think what you've heard in the past few days is that Centec has got a network. The network is up, it's running, it's already covering a significant part of our population, including the major population centres in South Africa. And the question I think that you have been asking quite often is, so why have we not started broadcasting yet? What are the delays? And the delays are essentially of a regulatory nature. I've put one diagram which was an effort to answer a question that you were also asking is where have the bottlenecks been and where have they occurred? And this is just a regulatory timeline which starts in the top left and then sort of moves its way around. And what you can see is that this government decided already in 1998 that the future of broadcasting lay in digital multi-channeling. It's there in the 1998 broadcasting white paper. And it was then the job to make that commitment towards digital multi-channeling a reality. And as early as 2002, the Minister of Communications at that time established an advisory body, the Digital Broadcasting Advisory Body, who over a period of 2 years came up with a report indicating what the preferred technologies were and what the impacts, what the international aspects were. And then moving ahead there, we saw a drive up to the initial talk in 2004, because coming out of the DBAB report, one of the critical things is that part of your migration is also about frequency management. And you would have to coordinate any migration that you do with your neighboring countries because it involves frequencies. So in 2004 at ITU, those were the first meetings that happened that were looking at how all the countries in both Europe and Africa in Region 1 were going to coordinate frequency spectrum for the migration from analog to digital. In that same year, we saw the DfE bring out a discussion paper starting to illustrate and firm up what the policy would be. And going forward into the period when this Parliament enacted the Electronic Communications Act, you'll see that there are provisions specifically around digital migration and how it should be dealt with, because at that time, you as the legislature already had it in mind how we were going to be moving forward and how this would be fitting into the technologically neutral licensing framework that you're establishing. And in the following year, the minister also had another report which came from a second advisory body which consisted of industry and all other critical stakeholders. And that report was the basis for what we saw as being the national policy, broadcasting digital migration policy. And also in 2006, we also saw a firm frequency plan being adopted at the ITU. So the frequency planning was in place. It was something we could tick off. We also had in 2006 cabinet setting some deadlines for DTT switch on and analog switch off. And then we moved very rapidly there. We saw the Broadcasting Digital National Policy coming out in 2008, and very quite rapidly following that was draft DTT regulations, the draft frequency plan from the National Frequency Assignment and Allocation, as well as a draft DTT standard. So 2008 was a really productive year from a regulatory perspective. Everybody was moving very fast and together in a coordinated fashion. In 2009, we saw final DTT regulations being made, which allocated the SABC 100% of MUX 1, ETB 60% of MUX 2, and MNET was supposed to do a hard switchover on its existing frequencies, but would only be allowed to use 50% of that new MUX it would be creating out of its existing frequencies until after analog switch-off. Kind of a case of hobbling the horse so that the rest of the market can catch up. And in 2009, we also saw another draft, a thick draft, because there's a lot of debate about how we would be moving ahead around frequency planning. But it was also a very good year in the sense that the digital Zonga was launched, and we now had an active body advising the minister with industry stakeholders and experts, as well as forming the basis for coordination of the sector. That body comprised not only the broadcasters, but also manufacturing and some retail. But we then hit the first obstacle. In 2009, the final DTT regulations were withdrawn, so they weren't really final. And what that meant was that up until that point, ETV, SABC, and MNET were beginning to prepare business plans, how many channels you would be putting on, looking at the typical type of channels you would be acquiring, all that. But once those DTT regulations were withdrawn, you have to halt all those plans, because what are you going to be planning on? So we then saw a period of draft DTT regulation coming out, but we did see a finalization of our frequency plan. And in 2010, we saw the second final DTT regulations coming out. There was a change in the capacity allocated, so SABC no longer had 100% of MUX 1. They would have to reserve some channel for the Trinity Broadcasting Network and existing community TV broadcasts at that time. ETV had a reduction to 50% of MUX 2, and MNET was no longer going to be doing a hard switchover, but would be portioned on 40% of that MUX 2. So once again, things were moving ahead. You had a regulation in place that would allow you to begin to go back to your board, get approvals, start to work on budgets, start to work on channels. And then we hit another roadblock, which halted everything again internally. And that was the DOC standards debate around DVD versus IFEB. The question was phrased wrong, but the outcome was a good one, because the outcome was that we would, because of the delay, that year delay allowed us to see a period when DVB-T2 boxes started to become economically more viable, and both broadcasters and the DOC could see a tremendous potential of implementing a second generation digital technology and leapfrogging ahead of those countries who had gone with third generation technology. But it was also a bit of a hiccup in that year, because the Digital Zonga Council was dissolved. And so you lost that element of coordination between various and different parties, and the communication channels between parties that appeared. But we still moved ahead, and we started to see a new Digital Zonga Council being appointed. We saw SADC as a region adopting DVB-T2. It established a roadmap for digital migration in the same year. It set an analog switch-off date for the region of the 31st of December 2013, and also published some minimum set-top box requirements. In 2010, Cabinet also adopted DVB-T2 and changed the analog switch-off date to 2013. We also saw the South African Bureau of Standards rapidly moving ahead to amend the 2009 standard, which was for DVB-T, so that we would have set-top box standard geared for DVB-T2. And we also saw the creation of the Digital Migration Office to start drive project planning around, or programs, managing programs at the DOC. But we also found that the Digital Zonga that was established actually became inactive through disuse. There were really very few meetings, and then those meetings seemed to dissolve. So rather than a big announcement that it had been abandoned in newspapers, it effectively just died a very quiet death without being noticed. Well,
it was the time we were busy arguing about stipends and other things.
But we did see also in 2011 the DSC getting draft amendments for the BD national policy, the Broadcasting Digital Migration Policy. These were taking in account some of the movements to new technology, DVD-T2, and there were assurances that this would move very rapidly. There was also an indication from ICASA that they were looking at repealing the second final DTT regulations. There was an appeal from industry at that time. We felt that although there were some flaws with these regulations, that if they reopened the process, it would drag out considerably longer. But unfortunately, the second final DTT regulations were repealed, and was a hope that this might only be a matter that could be addressed within a few months. And we saw a third draft regulation being published, and then we also saw the final Broadcasting Digital Migration National Policy coming out, and the free-to-air set-top box standard was also published in this year. We also saw this year being another year of rapid regulatory movement, with Cabinet approving the manufacturing strategy and the subsidy scheme. We also saw DOC publishing the request for information for the government-subsidized free-to-air set-top boxes, and it seemed very positive that we were moving. And then we hit another little bottleneck, which was fourth draft DT regulations. So what we had hoped to be with the final, yet another draft for debating. And then we thought we are really starting to move forward, because it'll be a month or two, there were just some questions that ICASA needed to finalize. And at that time, DOC had published the request for proposals for the government subsidized free-to-air set-top boxes. So one could envisage that you'd be seeing the manufacture of set-top boxes beginning, which is a prerequisite for a launch. And then we hit what it hopefully is the final roadblock, which is EDD versus the minister questioning the whole issue of where set-top box control will be managed from. And we hope that that will be resolved soon. And I think we've heard yesterday that there were talks to try and resolve this matter. And we hope that we'll be seeing South Africa moving forward. But with these delays, this question does come, is our DTT future, it clearly can't be an analog switch off in 2013. So I put some question marks there, will it be 2015? And we saw from the presentation that DOC made that they are gearing up for a 2015 deadline rather than the 2013. So that's a lot of the history. And I think the key thing is that to launch, from a regulatory perspective, the basics need to be in place. That starter pistol can only be fired if all the prerequisites are there. And we have done a lot, as you saw from that outline. We've got the national policy in place. We have a supportive legislative framework. We have a terrestrial frequency plan. We have an adopted standard and a set-top box standard in place. We have a migration office to go for coordination. But there are still the outstanding issues. The DTT regulations have to be in place. They enable channel authorization, which itself is going to be another process. The set-top box control issue is frozen at the moment because of litigation. The need for a conformant regime, because the set-top boxes that get manufactured before they can go out to the public have to be assessed to see that they are compliant with the standard and that they will be working the way that you envisage them to work. The minister would also need to, once the DT regulations are up, gazette what is the period, what is the digital switch on date, what is the target date for us to all go for in terms of a commercial launch. And the other issue, which is quite a critical one, is the Syntec rate card needs to be at the correct pricing for broadcasters to say, there's a business model here for us. So what are the challenges? The one is the DTT rate, and I'm not going to go into detail about it. We've heard from ICASA that they are imminent. But what is key is that they must enable a fast-track channel authorization process. If you don't have a fast-track channel authorization process, then there are no new digital channels on the DT platform at commercial launch. The digital switch-on and the analog switch-off dates are also quite key. They have to be formally gazetted by minister, because once those dates are out there, broadcasters have a timeline that they can work towards in terms of preparing business plans and budgets. And a major challenge is uncertainty. We need to do away with uncertainty, because uncertainty delays and makes people very risk-averse. There's manufacturer uncertainty. The free-to-air set-top box standard in place, there's a lot of uncertainty about what is set-top box control and what it involves. So there's been no manufacturer. Nobody is prepared to start manufacturing these free-to-air set-top boxes until they know exactly what this involves. And manufacturers require at least 6 to 8 months from signing a contract to get to retail. So that is a fairly critical time period. That period can only really shorten if the manufacturer were to go on risk right now at this moment and procure components in advance. There's also consumer uncertainty, and this is a very big one. There is no comprehensive consumer campaign in place at the moment. And there is no digital certification mark scheme in place at the moment that's being communicated to that public so that they know when they go into a store that they should only be purchasing equipment that bears that mark. The Centec tariff, which have been mentioned quite a bit, is that in 2011 ICASA indicated it would proceed with tariff regulations. And the delay in publishing such regulation does mean that any commercial DTT launch would be at risk. Whose risk? The risk would be for the SABC, ETV, and MNET, who have had difficulty in concluding negotiations with Centec on the DTT rate card. At the moment, it appears to be 3.8 times higher than what the cost should be in comparison to analog and digital. This may also impact on ETV and MNET's decision. In the absence of reasonable tariffs, we may not use Centec then as the signal distributor for Mics 2, and then we would envisage some delays because we would have to then looking at access to networks and issues that would arise around that. But hopefully we can come to reasonable negotiations on those tariffs. And I'll hand over now to my colleague, Kelber.
Thank you, and honorable member. I'm going to deal with the preparation for launch. As many speakers have already alluded to, the move to digital is similar to what we have seen in the past, where we used to have black and white TV, and then we had color television being launched in the country. So this move from one technology platform to another is not entirely new, and it's for this reason that we think it can be described as a change from black and white television to color television. But now, looking at the keys for success of launch of DTT, is that from the trial, as AFF has already alluded to, we have had valuable experience that it should be able to prepare us to have a very good and successful commercial launch of DTT in the country. And in the MNET case, we have what we call the key C's for a successful migration. And one of the aspects that we refer to is that content is key. Without content, consumers won't be able to go out and buy set-top boxes. Therefore, you need a very good content offering to stimulate the migration. The other issue that comes with regard to the keys is the cost versus the features. Here, we need to really strike a balance in terms of the features that we want to see in our DTT offering, at the same time, relating that to at what cost will it come to. And our view in this instance is that we need to keep it simple and get going. The more features you put in, the more complications you bring, and the more costly it becomes, and therefore it might hamper your chances of being able to launch successfully. The other issue that comes is that you need to have a very strong component regime. As you may be aware from Dave's experience with regard to the trials, there have been problems with regard to the experience that consumers out there have not had with regard to using a set-top box as part of the in-home to view television. Therefore, in terms of the component regime that you put in place, you need to have a very strong component regime to make sure that the vulnerable are not exposed, and protect them as much as you can by having a very good component regime. Communication also is key in this instance. You need to have a central coordinating point on which everybody can refer to in terms of sending out the right message to everybody and making sure that you have a centrally coordinated communication, clear message that everybody has bought into. As many speakers have already said, you also need cooperation of all key stakeholders. This is key. The more people come together and work closely, the more results you'll be able to reach. Lastly, on the key seat is the consumer support. As you have seen from the trial, again, you need a very good consumer support system in place, and this will happen during and post-migration period because people will still have decoders in after the analog switch off, and therefore consumers need to know where to get support from, and so that they don't run the risk of not getting signal from time to time. So we need to have a very good consumer support system. And then in looking at other key successes for the migration, that it is very important to know that the pace of migration will be determined by South African TV households. So the more uptake is out there where with regards to TV households, the better for us to be able to migrate very quickly. And one thing that we need to take cognizance of is that our viewers will need to be convinced that the DTT offering is compelling enough for them to purchase the STB. And for that, we are saying that in order for somebody to go out and buy a new STB, there has to be something compelling for him to want to buy that STB, and content, again, here comes into the offering. I think one peculiar situation that at MNET we find ourselves in is that MNET is different from other broadcasters in that it must convince subscribers who already have bought an analog STB to pay for a second DTT pay TV STB. So unlike the current situation where the free-to-air broadcasters just broadcast and then people just receive the signal, in case of MNET, the subscribers already have an analog STB in the home and they have to go out there to chase another STB for them to continue viewing television, and therefore there has to be something compelling for them to be able to be convinced that yes, indeed, they need to put another investment into place to go and purchase another STB for the sake of viewing MNET and still pay a subscription for it. So for a strong consumer launch of DTT is critical. So in terms of the launching of DTT, we need to have a strong consumer launch and send out a message out there that is strong, that is compelling, so that people can be able to buy into this project. So one thing that we consider is the maximum number of channels available at launch. We should have a maximum number of channels available at launch, or we run the risk of slow consumer take-up. So if you have very little new content offering in this platform, you find that you run the risk of people taking up the services slowly, and therefore hampering our progress towards successfully making a ritual. In case of MNET, again, this is also dependent on the capacity that ICASA is going to allocate in terms of the regulations on MAX2. What we intend offering is that we'll offer multi-TV channels at better quality that currently received on analog. This is because of the advancement in technology and it's no-brainer. The other thing that we'll be able to offer on this platform is that will be electronic program guide, which will have on-screen now-next information over 7 days, which really just gives you a program guide of what programs are going to come for the next 7 days if you to watch TV. The other issue that comes handy with regard to this technology is that you are able to do something that were almost impossible to do in the past. And one of the things that you are able to cater to the differently able people, and what we intend offering is that we'll offer for visually impaired audio services, and we'll have hard of hearing subtitling for people with visual and audio impairments. I think this is a positive development, and I think members have already raised the issue in the previous presentation as to whether some of the broadcasters are working towards coming up with this, and this is the offering that we commit to bring as part of our DTT offering. And of course, there will be basic interactivity.
Speaking of committing, there's quite a number of people who committed to a commercial pay TV and have not launched it, please. I'm not sure how we stick your commitment.
Fortunately, in the case of MNET, this has been trialed quite a number of times and seems to be working very fine, and we do not see any problems with regard to catering for what we've catered for, what we have mentioned in this slide, so we don't see any problem catering for the visually impaired audio and hard of hearing subtitling as part of our DTT offering going forward. We, however, would like to make the point that the business plans and number of channels on UK is difficult to determine at this point in time, because as draft regulations have been changing from time to time, the changes in capacity allocated on the multiplex make it difficult for us to make plans. So depending on how the capacity is allocated, then the business plan also gets affected into what kind of offering you can put onto this platform. And then on the next slide, I think what we're trying to depict here is that there are a number of milestones that need to be achieved for us to be able to do a commercial launch. One thing that we are saying that, of course, without any regulations, then it's very difficult for us to begin to launch. The other thing that we consider is that from 1 month after the ICAO regulations have been published, we think we should be 7 months or so away in terms of going to commercial launch. Some of the processes that we have alluded to in the slide run and plan parallel because it's not like all of them are dependent on what happens. We think that from the date of the regulation, it should take us between 3 months for broadcasters and Centec to agree on the rate cards, and that will be a positive step forward for us to achieving a launch 7 months after the TT regulations. We think the TOC will need to publish digital schedule of performance period within a month of ICAPA to finalize the regulation. I think it's important that we work towards a common date that has been defined by policies on this date, as South Africa will start, and on this date we intend to finish. That brings in a commitment from all stakeholders to work towards a common date. In terms of standard authorizations, which we have already raised quite a number of times with the car, so that the more senior the circumstances are in terms of the processes with regard to channel operations, the more it makes it difficult for any broadcaster to finalize the business plan. And we hope that in the final regulation, the channel authorization process will be streamlined to cater for not maximum of 4 months for anybody to, for a caster to decide as to whether the channels have been authorized for them. Of course, the SP manufacturer, like anyone has said, is between 6 and 8 months from the time that everything has been finalized in terms of the STB control issue, which is the only thing outstanding. And of course, we'll have to do our business rules to make sure that our business systems work back to back in terms of activating customers as the priority coders and what to receive the services. The other issue that, of course, everybody has mentioned quite a number of times is with regard to marketing. And of course, there has to be a pre-marketing period for preparing people that this thing is coming on this particular day, and then eventually keep on doing a lot of marketing, even during after it has been launched, and also just to make sure that you get more customers to buy into the service that you are offering. So the marketing has to happen from time to time as the project unfolds. On that note, I'll head over to Patricia.
Thank you, Calvin. I think that I would just like to conclude by saying the following, that from an MDEC perspective, we are ready, we are willing, we are able. We want to do this, and we want to do it quickly. We take it very seriously, as you could see by the enormous amount of time and energy and effort spent in our trials and looking at all the different systems and things that we can and cannot do. So we have a very good idea of what we need to do to move forward. Just a reminder, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members, that the sooner MNET can migrate, the sooner we can return a digital dividend. And that is, after all, the ultimate goal of what digital migration is all about, from analog to digital. So, in summary, we would be ready to start soonest, as soon as the regulations are published, as soon as channel authorization can be given to us, so we really need to have the fast track. As soon as the minister publishes the illumination period, we need to have the free-to-air channels available and accessible on all set-top boxes in the interest of having a single set-top box in each household, and we need to have the Centec rate card finalized. When all those things are in place, and hopefully all those things can happen very quickly, then we at MNET can give the green light and we can go. Thank you. We'll take any questions if there are any. Mr. Chairperson.
Yes, I'm sure there will be questions after lunch. Members, we just have to pray for lunch and we'll come back at 2. Chairperson and CEOs of the entities which were presenting. I don't know the whole thing, but there was a chairperson and CEO. but I would assume it's the DDG and someone else. Your lunch will be in New Wing, second floor, and the member. The rest, your lunch will be here with a separate food looking at you. So can we do like that so that we save time? The entities, chairperson and CEO, will go to the New Wing, second floor. There's a dining hall there. That will have your lunch and the members. The rest, it will be here. DTG, you will decide to come with you there at the New Wing. The rest, your lunch will come in here. And don't look at me, not you appointed chairperson and CEO. Not me. Thanks very much, admitted to.